I help those people, like, how do they craft their initial service offering? How do they find their first or few clients? Like, what does that look like? And I help them navigate that.
So today we talked to Thomas Strider. Thomas was introduced to me by a friend of mine, and Thomas has an amazing presence on LinkedIn. So what he does, and his whole goal, is to create a business to where he does not have to have tons and tons of employees, but he can yet help business owners achieve all the goals that they want to achieve. And he is doing a wonderful job at that. We talked about where he grew up, some hardships as he grew up, means he moved to Texas, then he moved back to Alabama. We talked about the different things about his life, a little bit about his wife and his marriage, but then we really got deep into all the aspects of his business and how he's grown his business and what his goals are for the next 5 years. So you will enjoy this episode with Thomas Strider. Thomas, thanks so much for being here today.
Yeah, thanks for inviting me. I'm glad we could get together and do this on such short notice too.
So the basic premise behind what we do is we're going to talk to business owners about who they are, what they do, and there's a little nuances to everything that we do. We've been talking off air for 5 or 10 minutes, and there's already little nuances to things that we do, believe, and think. And so the first question that I ask is, who are you and what do you do?
So, I mean, my name is Thomas Strider. Well, let's start there. But who I am is beyond the business. Like, I am a mission-driven person. So I believe that everyone can operate a business that they both love, that fits their lifestyle, and also is highly profitable. So I focus on high-margin businesses that can basically go along well with your life, whether you have children, whether you have hobbies, whatever it is the case may be. Work wherever you want, whenever you want, and make good money.
So the high margin business is different for everybody. It's everybody you talk to is going to be different. You don't have a suggestion of like, hey, you need to do this.
No, I don't necessarily have a suggestion. When I say high margin, I mean leveraging tools and tech that we have now, anything from AI to software. All of my clients and everything that I do is digitally based. Mm-hmm. So internet. So anything that you can do on a laptop, you can turn into a high margin business.
Sure.
Basically, if it's an in demand skill.
Gotcha. So
writing, brand design, anything that can be service based that you can do from a laptop,
yep,
you can turn it into a high margin business.
So tell me about growing up. Where did you grow up and like what was life like as a kid?
So I'm originally from Tuscaloosa, okay, man. But it was a little conflicting. I wasn't the Roll Tide type.
Yeah, sure.
My parents went to Auburn. So imagine having Auburn parents in Tuscaloosa, Alabama. But I was a rebel. So naturally, I rooted for neither Alabama or Auburn. And so fitting in was a little bit challenging on that front. Mm-hmm. Other than that, I had a pretty normal childhood until we moved to Texas. Moved to West Texas when I was 11 years old.
Huh.
And this is when things kind of got complicated for me. So I'm pretty open about the ups and downs of battles I've had with depression through my life. And so when I was 11, my dad got hospitalized for the first time with just a heart condition. Ended up having bypass surgery. My mother was also diagnosed with cancer at this time.
Oh my gosh.
And I'm 11-year-old that just moved states.
Yeah. Any brothers or sisters?
One brother. Okay. Older brother, 14 months older than me. And so that was a challenging time. And that's like when I really became like self-aware about emotions and thinking. And so honestly, like my little self-improvement journey I've had started around then.
So tell me about growing up. Now in those two situations, how did they end up? Are your parents still living? What's going on there?
So yeah, my father ended up okay at the time.
Yeah.
He passed away in 2018.
Okay.
He was 60 years old. Heart issues.
Yeah.
Of course. And then my mother, so she is the true warrior and the hero of my life. So my mother had stage 4 cancer when I was 11 years old. She was told by multiple doctors she would pass away.
Wow.
She kicked cancer in the tail anyway, man. So she lived healthy and happily for 20 years, and then her cancer returned. Mm-hmm. What was it, late 2021.
Okay.
She was re-diagnosed. And guess what, man? She's kicking its tail again.
That's incredible.
So yeah, she is a warrior, a fighter. If there's anyone that can beat anything and overcome an obstacle, it's her.
Man, that's wonderful. So growing up in Texas, tell me about, what were you involved in? Were you involved in sports? Were you a super academic kid? What? Tell me that.
Yeah, so I was not the academic kid. I was smart in elementary school when you didn't have to try. I got to high school. yeah, was turned into a BC student out of not caring. We lived in Texas for a short period of time. Me and my brother were both athletes. So baseball, basketball, my brother played football, ended up playing at Samford.
Your brother did?
Yeah.
Great.
And so we moved back here for high school. And so I played, you know, high school basketball, baseball, all this
Tuscaloosa
stuff.
Or Birmingham?
In Birmingham.
Where'd you go?
Chelsea.
Okay.
So right down the road from here. So we did that. And I honestly, man, I got burned out from sports. Like,
really?
My household was pretty demanding on the athletics.
Yeah.
Let's just put it like that.
Sure.
So year-round baseball, all this stuff, travel basketball, all that stuff. And like, unless you truly, truly love it, man, it will burn you out.
Yeah.
Of course. So a lot of focus on athletics, then went to college at UAB. So stayed local for that. Yeah. I wasn't ready to move away. Looking back, I wish I had, because I know how important it is to step out of your comfort zone, of course. But when I was 18, I was still insecure, still a little bit afraid. But I was like, so let me find the happy middle ground. I'll move out, but I'll just go local.
But so you did move?
I moved to UAB.
But look, here's the thing. I was 17 miles away. I went to UAB as well. I was 17 miles away, and I was as far away as I needed to be.
That's how I felt.
So I have a very deep feeling about this. I think when you get turn 18 and you decide to go to college, I think you think you need to move out. And the shtick with all these parents is, and kids too, is want to save money. But that is college is the best launching point for that in-between ground of having to pay all my bills and growing up and still having a little bit of the childhood. It's a good like runway into adulthood because you're kind of in adult purgatory. You're not really an adult yet, but you're getting really, really close to it. And I can't tell you, I've learned so much more being on campus and being in quote college than I did in the classroom.
Oh, for sure. For me too. Like when I stepped into college for the first time and moved out, I mean, during high school, I was very insecure.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of anxiety around who I was. And of course, you're a teenager, so that's natural. But getting to college, that was my first step into like figuring out who I was. I like to say I have two gigantic leaps that I've taken in my life to figuring out and determining who I am as a person. And the first one was college. Like you get there, you're surrounded by a whole bunch of new people. It's equally exciting, but it's also equally like, okay, now I can be who I want to be.
Yep.
It's a reset.
Oh, yeah. Sure.
And sometimes that gets you in trouble. Sometimes it's the best thing that ever happened to you.
Yeah, I agree. So looking at your website, okay, here's what I reduced from watching your social, looking at everything that you do. You help business owners optimize their business, and there's a ton of information out there about creating content around their business.
Correct.
Is this pretty accurate?
Yes. So I will clarify it even further. So I really have two portions of what is like my personal business, which I just call Thomas Strider LLC. Right?
Yeah.
So there is a consulting side and a coaching side. So the consulting side is financial and operational consulting for small businesses, typically somewhere between $1 million in annual revenue and $10 million in annual revenue. That's where most of them fall. So what I do for them is take a look at their P&L. Where are you financially healthy? Where are you unhealthy?
This is
the consulting
side. Okay.
Correct. And then what steps you can take to improve, whether that's removing duplicative tools, whether that's finding something new that can generate more revenue for you, whatever the case may be. It's different for every company or usually, and that's the fun and exciting part. So then there's the coaching side.
Let me stop.
Sure.
The consulting side. Okay, hard question. What qualifies you to consult with me? Because I'm in that room. I'm in that $1 million to $10 million. What qualifies you to consult me on those things?
Sure. So, a number of things. So, number one, I have worked as a financial consultant in the corporate world. So, okay. I have that direct experience with financial analytics in the corporate world. I've also worked in the banking industry as a wealth advisor and a small business consultant for companies even larger than that. But a lot of companies in that range, and that was with Regions, and that was with BBVA. So I did that for 3 years. I have an MBA in data analytics. So I basically combined all of this experience, along with my own entrepreneurship experience, okay, and put it into an offer that helps people like that. Now, the reason it's separate, it's really good, the reason that's a really good question, and the reason it's separate from coaching is because I don't believe in coaching someone who's doing something at a level you have not achieved yourself. So all of my businesses are micro agencies focused on not necessarily maximizing revenue, but maximizing margins and just having a great net profit.
Explain the difference in what you just said, because there's a lot of people out there may not understand. What's the difference in maximizing revenue and maximizing margin?
So maximizing revenue is just, so let's start with the definition of revenue. So revenue is just basically sales in terms of dollars. So a company doing $10 million in revenue has made $10 million in sales. However, if the product or service you're delivering requires you to hire a whole bunch of people, have an entire team of experts to help you deliver that $10 million in sales, whatever that deliverable may be, and you're paying them $9 million to do it, so you have $1 million left over in profit. Very simple example. Whereas, say you deliver $500,000 in sales and revenue, but it's just yourself,
mm-hmm,
and you're only using two or three tools, maybe it costs you 10 grand in tools, now you have $409,000 left over, you can pay yourself, you can do whatever you want to do with it.
Right.
Spend more on marketing to land new clients, whatever. So that's the difference between revenue and then net profit, right? So typically, and generally speaking, the larger you're going to scale in revenue, the more people you're going to need to hire,
sure,
to deliver your results. And so your margins are going to decrease. So revenue up, margins down.
Right.
Whereas if you stay very micro, which is how I operate all of mine, and the only people you hire to help you are contractors or freelancers, you can operate way cheaper and at a lower cost, but at the expense of total top line revenue. So it's really about finding the balance of where you want to be in your business.
You know? So you go in and help people on their business, look at their numbers, look at their P&Ls, all that stuff, and say, tweak this, add this, take away this, things like that. Coaching side, let's talk through that. Tell me what, yep, that looks like.
So coaching is specifically for freelancers, micro agency owners, and typically they will fall into two categories. So number one is they've started making social media content. They're building their personal brand. They have a small audience, but they have no idea how to monetize that or turn it into a business. It's a different skill. Business building and audience building and social media building.
Correct.
Different skills.
Very much so.
So I help those people, like, how do they craft their initial service offering? How do they find their first or few clients? Like, what does that look like? And I help them navigate that. The other side is successful business owners that have a business they can now expand because they have product market fit, they know what they're doing, they know how to sell, but they just need more people and more eyeballs on their service or products, and then they can deliver it. So for them, I teach them, how do you build your audience around, like, your expertise? How do you get the right eyes on your content? How do you find people online to actually sell to? And so it's those two camps.
Do you just work with e-com people, or do you work with people that have a service to the public, to the local public?
So no, I don't. So I specifically work with people that can deliver their service online, nothing local.
Not going to work with a landscape agency?
No, because to me,
okay, perfect.
I think there's a lot of misconceptions around who should actually build their personal brand and how,
sure,
how they should build an audience. So for someone that's a landscaper, do they really need people in California, if they live in Alabama, to know about their business?
Probably.
No.
Yeah.
And so realistically, to build your personal brand, like, you're just going to want to network. You're going to want to go to events in person around your community. You're going to want to maybe pitch pieces to your local news. You're going to want to maybe create a little bit of content around who you're helping and satisfied customers, but you don't need thousands and thousands of people from all over the world following your stuff unless you're seeking opportunities outside your business and diversifying your revenue.
Correct.
Right? Like, that's a different game, and that's okay. But in terms of attracting people to your landscaping business, it's a waste of time for you to go on LinkedIn and talk to people from all over the world and get followers,
sure,
from all over the world. And
yeah,
so I specifically help people that can serve people really anywhere.
Yeah.
If
I've seen a lot of your content on LinkedIn. Okay, like, is that kind of your jumping off point? Is that where you focus a lot on?
So I would say LinkedIn is the primary place for me. The reason being is there's a great reach, and by reach I mean every time you post, it's going to see a larger number of people as opposed to something like an Instagram. However, it's also where decision makers live. And so if you're a business-centric creator, there's like this whole influencer world, of course, that we know.
Yeah.
But if you're a business-centric creator, you want to be where the decision makers are, the people that actually want to do business and hire you.
Yeah.
And so for me, naturally, that's LinkedIn. And of course, I post on Instagram, I post on Medium, I write content on my own website, I use Pinterest. Like, I kind of do a little bit of everything. But if I was to recommend one place for people that are more business-minded and want to attract people for their business, that's LinkedIn.
Yeah. LinkedIn. Are you trying to build your personal brand? Outside of like growing your business, are you trying to build the Thomas Strider brand?
Yes.
Okay. Why is that? Is that simply because, tell me why. Tell me why you're trying to do that.
Sure. So outside of just building my own businesses, like for me, I want to diversify revenue streams.
Great.
Number one. Of course, I want to help more people.
Sure.
Number two. But number three, like there's a lot of projects and things I want to achieve in my life and ways I want to reach more people that cannot be accessed unless you have an established personal brand.
Sure.
So for example, I don't shy away from telling people my huge big dreams.
Yeah.
Like I want to be a New York Times bestseller one day. How can I do that without a whole bunch of people that want to read what I have to say?
Yeah.
Anybody can write a book. Selling a book is different.
Sure.
So when you think about really big goals like that, really impactful goals like that, how do I get there?
Right. Alex Hormozi would have never sold as many books as he did had he not had an audience. So you got to have an audience in order to sell. Do you have to have an audience? I will say this. I didn't know who James Clear was before Atomic Habits.
True. However, that's a great example. James Clear started his blog in 2013.
Yes.
And before he ever launched a book, he already had a newsletter list of well over 100,000 people.
Well over 100,000 people.
And so on the one hand,
sure,
millions and millions and millions of us had no idea who he was, but in the background, he was slowly doing it. And then the book has paid dividends, obviously, since then.
Yeah. Did you see the stat of the day? He was a bestseller. He was the number one in some category in 2021. Was not in 2022, but was again in 2023.
Dude, I know it's crazy. And so there's another
bonkers.
I know. It's like wild how like if you just write something excellent and just keep at it on your one thing, it's amazing how successful it can become over time. Another great example of that I like to point to is Ryan Holiday. So Ryan Holiday has written like how many books now? 13. But it wasn't until his eighth or ninth book that he was a bestseller and just like now all of a sudden he's one of the most premier authors in the world. And so,
but he also started out doing not stoicism.
Wasn't he doing marketing to start
with? He was.
Yeah.
So he started out, so it's so funny you say this because I heard a guy talk about this. Heard it this morning. So he started out in one thing and he built some traction. And he started out doing it, then he was doing something else. And then he stumbled upon stoicism. Like, and that's a shtick. Like that's what you, when you think of Ryan Holiday, you think of that thing right now. But like you said, how many books have you written? 13?
Yeah, I think it's 13. I could be wrong on the number, but it's something like that. Yeah.
So, but yeah, it's crazy. But like you were saying, you know, James Clear, he had 100,000 or over 100,000 people that really, really just were disciplistic almost about what he did. And then once those people got a hold to it and he wrote a book, it was just like wildfire from there. And it was a really, really good book. Have you read it?
I have. I've read most of it. Yeah. And it's also really interesting too. I think James Clear is a great example for this. He took one little word that you don't really think about much, habits, and turned this into the number one book for however many months.
It's crazy. But you know what though? There are a handful of things. I'm reading Morgan Housel. You know Morgan Housel, Psychology of Money, new book is same as ever. I'm 3/4 the way through it. And this book is really, really good. I love standalone chapters, by the way. And he talks about a handful of things that are just, these things are not going to change. And it goes through just these different principles. It's never going to change. And one of the things is habits. If you just continue to build good habits, you will be successful. He said there's so much money done on cancer research and curing cancer. And like when someone has cancer, curing that thing. When in reality, the answer in most cases is cancer prevention. But it's boring. And he said, and boring doesn't sell. And I thought that was extremely intuitive by what he was saying, but it's the same thing with James Clear. Habits are kind of boring, but the guy figured out a way to make it exciting. So tell me about this bestseller thing. I love this. What do you enjoy writing? Tell me about that.
So I love writing on personal development a lot, and then anything business related. Mm-hmm. The reason personal development so much is because it can apply to basically everyone. And I find that every person that I come across that's interesting or has a cool story or is wildly successful, like they put a huge focus on personal development. Like they look at themselves with a lens that the average person does not, and they ask better of themselves.
Right.
How, not necessarily in like a toxic, like, oh, you're not good enough way, but just in like a, you know, like we're imperfect beings. Mm-hmm. How can we, or how can I, you know, do a little bit better today? How can I live my life a little more full today?
Right.
And I'm just fascinated by all the approaches to that. One thing, like one quote, for example, that really changed my life was actually a Buddhist philosophy, and it was on compassion. And so I used to really, really struggle with not being able to tell people hard truths. So what I found was that got really complicated when you don't tell people hard truths or your real feelings. You end up like just carrying that weight yourself, and it just really eats away at you. And so it's really important to have hard conversations in respectful ways. And they basically said, like, you know, there's two types of compassion. There's idiot compassion and there's real compassion. So idiot compassion is when you don't say what you're actually feeling, and over time it just weighs on you and it hurts and hurts and hurts, and the situation gets worse and worse and worse and worse.
Right.
And so really you're just doing, even though it's good spirited, you don't want to burden someone with your problem.
Mm-hmm.
It causes more damage over time. Whereas if you just tell them respectfully, like how you feel, you can actually work it out. Even if it hurts them, it's worth it. And that's real compassion. And so just all kinds of different philosophies for how to become a better human being, like really just is so interesting.
Is that what you want? Yeah. Tell me about Apex Content.
Sure. So that is the micro agency that I use for content and copywriting. So back in 2016, when I first started entrepreneurship and freelancing, the second thing I did was content writing. This was kind of coming out of the heyday of blogs. Everybody wanted a blog, man.
Yeah.
And so I started content writing and got experience there. And so then when I started writing online a lot more on LinkedIn and other places like Medium, I started getting a lot more traction again for, hey, do you write? Like, do you do paid writing services? So I kind of just spun that back up as an extension of my freelance writing from years ago. And so that is a micro agency. And I primarily do two things, blog writing and then thought leadership writing, ghostwriting for other people.
Ghostwriting.
Yeah. So that's Apex Content in a nutshell.
We were talking about revenue off camera. Talk about how much revenue comes from Apex Content.
In 2023, around 50K.
That's good.
Yeah. It's like, because I've built a name for myself at this point, it kind of just fuels itself. I mean, I have SEO bringing inbound leads for it, and I entertain some of that. Like Google My Business, all the regular stuff you'll see.
Right.
But yeah, like 50K just from random writing projects because I write online every day. Kind of sick.
Not bad. Okay, so let's talk about the revenue streams you have. You have consulting, you have coaching, and then you have Apex Content. Is that the three branches?
Correct. Yep.
Okay, so I was looking on your website. This is fascinating to me. How many $500 an hour sessions do you book a month?
3 to 4, depending.
Really?
Yeah, and all you have to do is put a link, have traffic going to it, and that's it. So yeah. And it's just demand. As you build your credibility and audience online, like around one specific thing like you're actually good at, and people have seen that, like they want to pick your brain. Like I believe that almost every professional out there, whether entrepreneur or not, even if you're in the corporate world, you probably have knowledge that someone else can benefit so heavily from. All you got to do is give people a reason to pay you.
Sure. Who can you help the most? Like where your knowledge and your expertise is in this area that you can help this niche of human beings the most?
People that have an established business, but they're struggling. And so what I mean specifically in terms of income and revenue, like they may have a business, they have clients, but they're probably making 40 to 60K a year. And I can help them, number one, increase top line revenue, number two, improve margins, and number three, like just drive an insane amount of leads. And so it's those people that are working way too hard at their business. So they're not unsuccessful, but they're just tired and drained. And they're stuck around that revenue level. And I can tell you why. It's because the first business I ever started was photography. And photography is hard work.
Physically hard work.
Physically hard work, number one. And number two, it's really easy to get stuck right around that income range because you get capped for time. Finding new clients is always this repeating cycle. And so I saw that firsthand for 2 years while I was doing it. And so eventually I actually went back to corporate and learned new skills, learned sales better, learned how to construct my offers better, learned how to do more async work too, as opposed to everything needing to be my hand. And then overcoming that barrier. Because once you get past that barrier, it's almost like you can really scale like so much further.
Right.
But so essentially, but to answer your question, it's those people who have a successful business in that sense. They're getting clients, but they just feel overworked. They're totally drained. How can I operationally become more effective and actually leverage my real expertise and position themselves to charge more, do more, land clients easier? So much of business is just positioning. And a lot of people have an expertise they're just not tapping into.
Just not tapping into it. Tell me about your, I looked on your website, your blog. How much traffic, excuse me, how many leads does your blog develop for you a month?
Not that many on the personal blog. In terms of contact submissions, 10.
Okay.
It's really not that many.
Yeah.
And then converting those is always more difficult just because oftentimes that's their first impression of me. And obviously like they're, so they don't really know quite as much as they need to do. You're reminding me, I need to redo my website actually. and so it's a harder sell. And so one of the things I'm moving away from is actually doing sales calls. So that is my goal for 2024 is actually to do zero sales calls and land all my clients totally async without talking to them at all face-to-face like this.
How are you planning on doing more revenue without doing any sales calls?
So it starts with the content strategy. It's the same thing I teach my clients. So let's talk about why someone would purchase from a business owner or service provider in the first place. They probably like them or align with their mission in some way. The second one being they're really credible. Like they do good work. You can see samples of their work on their website. And then number third, you have a problem you want solved now. So with the right content strategy, let's say I post on LinkedIn, if I share my values openly and people connect with that, I share my personality and they connect with that and they like me as a human.
Sure.
That's step one. And then step two is like, then I need to convince them that I'm credible. Like, hey, here's some client successes. Mm. Like my client had this problem. These are the steps we took. Here's where he is now. Here's where she is now. Look how successful they are. And then number three is painting that story and saying like, hey, if you have this problem, like, I understand. I've been in your shoes. I've been the struggling photographer at 50K before. Yeah. Now I make 350K in revenue. I can help you to achieve that. All you need to do is reach out and ask me.
Yeah.
So if you tap into all these three buckets, it's a simplistic level. Guess what? They're going to be like, I want that. Yeah. They'll be like, this guy has been in my shoes. He can help me. And so when you do that consistently enough for a longer period of time, you get this flywheel of leads and all that stuff. And they already know how you can help them because you told them already.
Because you told them.
I've already told them how I can help them. All they got to do is ask.
Where do most of your leads come from now?
LinkedIn. It's embarrassingly high for LinkedIn. And it's actually one of the reasons I'm diversifying more in the future is like 90% of my revenue can trace back to LinkedIn, which is dangerous. So
you being a copywriter and being good at writing, how much of your writing do you put into AI and spits out something on your website, on LinkedIn or whatever?
None.
Zero.
Zero.
Are all of your images on your website, your blog images from AI?
All of them? Not all of most them, of but them. Most of them, yeah. I use Midjourney.
Midjourney. Okay, I was wondering. Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, because I mean, visuals just break up the text. It's fun. You can make it relevant. I actually love AI tools. I just specifically don't use it for writing because
you don't need to.
Yeah, I don't need to. I have that skill. Now, for some people, it's great. It's great for ideas. I'm not saying people should not use it. It's great for ideas. It's great to outline blogs or thought pieces. It's just not for me. It's not necessary. Number one, because I know how to write better than AI. And number two, I, over the years, before AI tools were ever popular, I can crank out a blog in 30 minutes that'll perform better than what someone else can that's newer. in 5 hours. Right. And that's just because I've done it so many times and I have a systemized process for myself.
So one of the things you talk about on your website, being a financial analyst, what makes you an expert in that?
So I've worked as a financial analyst at 3 different places, all at different stages of revenue. So I've worked as a financial analyst at a local company that you've probably heard of, Motion Industries.
Yeah.
Huge Fortune 500 company as a subsidiary of General Parts. I've worked at as a financial analyst at a healthcare startup. It's called Main Street Family Care. They're also headquartered in Birmingham. And then the third place I worked as a financial analyst is a company called Goodway Group. And they're a marketing agency. They do over $100 million in net revenue. Yeah. And they're entirely, obviously, service-based and digital, which is the type of clients I help in the consulting firm. So I have a unique place where I've been a financial analyst at 3 different size companies doing 3 different things, which has given me a really kind of 360 viewpoint on the finances of a lot of different types of businesses.
That's a pretty good bit of experience. That's awesome. I want you to think about this question and I'm going to ask it twice. Okay. So what do you talk about the least that you want to talk about the most?
Financial operations in terms of content. Mm-hmm. And the reason being is because operations and having an understanding of an income statement and cash flow. So many business owners don't understand that. However, marketing and sales talk gets all the views.
Sure.
It's the sexy thing that everybody wants to know. But realistically, how many business owners can look at their P&L and they just like have no idea what's actually healthy? Way too many. And so I've done a poor job of that to this point. Now, the next question and the next logical step is, how am I going to correct that?
Yeah.
So that is the new platform that I've built and the new business I've built is to provide a whole bunch of resources and education around all things business, not just content and not just marketing and not just sales. It's how can I give people actual resources and learning materials that are affordable that can help you learn these things and in a not boring way. Go to YouTube and go to an accountant talking about an income statement. Boring.
Yeah, sure. So you have those available now. Are you working on those?
So I'm working on those. Okay. So the first thing I made available was just what I'm known best for. So that's content strategy.
Yeah.
Right? A digital course around that. But moving forward, the next product is a KPI dashboard, like for micro agency owners. How do you track expenses, revenue, and just an easy way to do it? And basically the income statement makes itself, because a lot of people that are just starting, they're not going to hire an accountant that's going to do it for them. You know, they're not going to have that. So like, how can I help them start to understand what a profitable business looks like?
Is that an add-on upsell to your coaching?
So here's how I structure the coaching. The coaching is easier to sell because the more templates, the more products I build, I can just add them in for free.
Sure.
So if I go $3,000 a month, I'll be on your team, coach you every step of the way. By the way, you're going to get the content strategy course. By the way, you're going to get my DM scripts. By the way, you're going to get my cold call scripts. By the way, you're going to get the KPI dashboard. And you're going to get all this stuff. And they're like, wow, that's a lot of stuff. Okay, I'm in.
Yeah.
And so the more stuff you can build and the easier you make it for them, the more likely they are to say yes.
Do you sell those things you just rattled off? Do you sell those separately?
So I sell them separately or will be selling them separately as the product suite for the new business kind of gets going.
Take off.
But generally speaking, it's kind of what I've been building for my clients over the past year and a half as they ask me questions like, what do I need to know about this? It's like, okay, I can build a resource for that. So
you get asked the same question once. It's like, okay. You get asked the same question twice. Okay. You get asked the same question 3 times. All right, I need to do something centered on this thing.
Right, exactly. And so the way I tell people, like, if you want to build a business, talk to your customers. Just ask them.
Yeah.
They will tell you exactly what they need.
Right.
And like, that's the simplest way. And so a lot of people, they build what they want or start a business on their passion or whatever. I'm like, I love passion. Follow it as best you can. But you want to build a business, talk to people and ask them what they need.
Build, and I heard this, I got to say this, passion is extremely good, but it's very overrated. He says, build a business of what you're good at.
Yeah.
And like, you may not be passionate about all those things, but you're pretty good at them. And most of the time, though, when you're pretty good at something, it's taken some, at least some passion in order to get good at that thing.
Yeah, like I think you kind of take what you like and then you build your skill set off of that. So a fun sports analogy here, or sports kind of segue, is like when I was a kid, I love projecting players' careers, right? Like, oh my gosh, he's been an all-star 5 years in a row. Like if he hits 30 home runs a season, he can pass Barry Bonds, like all that kind of stuff. But that's kind of like what forecasting is for financial analysis, right? Like, okay, if we land this client, hire this person to serve them, what's our net profit going to look like? Like, how does that transform our business looking forward? And so you look at all these scenarios. And so I kind of just took what I was interested in and just applied it to business for my career and all that kind of stuff. So start there. Like, find a skill you enjoy and ask yourself, how can I try to apply this in the business world? That's one thing. But yeah, passion is good, but passion can lead you astray.
Get you in trouble too. Sure. For someone that's good on video, what's the best platform for them to use to make money?
Oh, you think I'm good on video? Or are you saying for someone that is good on video?
For someone, yeah, let me ask it again. For someone that's good on video, what's the best platform to use to make money?
So I'll give you a two-part answer, if that's okay. So the best overall platform to build a personal brand to me is YouTube.
Okay.
The best platform in general to build your personal brand and land clients is LinkedIn.
Okay.
So it depends on your business model.
Yeah.
And what you're actually going to sell.
That's good. That's a great answer. What about for someone that's good at written word, what's the best platform for them to make money?
LinkedIn, without question.
Hands down.
Hands down.
How? Give me the 45-second version of the best way to do that on LinkedIn.
So, okay. So to write your way to success on LinkedIn, you're going to have three different categories. You're going to want to tell your story, share why you do what you do, share your mission. Then you're also going to want to combine that with sharing your credibility. Talk about your opinions on your industry, talk about the service you provide, talk about your client results. You're essentially establishing yourself as an authority in whatever it is that you sell. It's very important to stay focused on what it is you actually sell. You'll see a lot of people just talk about whatever they want. That's cool. That's great. At the end of the day, people need to know you for what it is you sell. Yeah. And then number three is you write in a way that inspires people or encourages people to actually reach out and speak with you and work with you. If you tap into all those three, good.
That's awesome. That's a great answer. If you had two books on your desk to give away to anyone and everyone, what would they be?
I have one that's easy.
Okay.
And that is Maybe You Should Talk to Someone by Lori Gottlieb.
Okay.
I think that's how you say her name. I might be wrong. And so a brief description of that book is it's a therapist who ends up going to therapy. And so it's her navigating her own personal development through kind of like both lenses. It's really interesting.
That's great.
The second one, if you're an entrepreneur, I honestly recommend The Almanac of Naval. Like it's just good. Straight to the point, no BS business and life advice. It is
very good.
It's easy to read.
And the guy that wrote it writes really well.
Yeah.
And he writes it in digestible snippets that are just really easy to understand.
Yeah, it's like, that's what I'll say. It's like, it's straight to the point, no BS, easy to read. Your business and life will benefit. He released
another one.
Biology. Another one soon, yeah, which I bought.
He released one on biology. I don't even know anything about biology. So, but it's good.
Yeah.
What's your business look like in 5 years?
So in 5 years, I believe I will be shifting entirely away from the writing for others. Only rewriting for myself.
Okay.
For brand building, hopefully a book. I will slowly be moving away from the consulting as well.
Why is that?
Because it requires the most time of everything. And so for me, it's about freeing up my time and leveraging my time as much as possible.
Sure.
So that's why.
That's great.
And so I would like to eventually shift only into products and webinars, things like that can be sold repeatedly over and over again to more people, as opposed to direct one-on-one work. And so a combination of product diversity, async communication, nothing that requires my direct hand, so I can just kind of just write, man.
Gotcha. Transitioning to writing, what does your first book look like? What is it going to be?
I've outlined two. So the first one is going to be a story-driven collection of all the business lessons I share online and just kind of curate all of it. So what is the mindset behind like successful entrepreneurship and content creation? Like, how do you land your first client? Talk about the actual scenarios I was in as a business owner and what they actually happened. I've already written the first chapter of that.
That's great.
But I like you mentioned earlier, Morgan Housel has like every chapter is kind of a standalone.
Love it.
That's kind of how I do it. So that's kind of how I want to structure it. So I want to say like, here's what happened with me. Here's the mistake I made and what I learned. Here's someone that made the opposite decision and how successful they were. So here's how you can apply it to your own business or your own life. So it's like 1, 2, 3.
Mm-hmm.
My mistake or my success, someone else's mistake, their success. Here's exactly how you can apply it. So it's a little bit of life advice, but a whole lot of application of the knowledge. I don't think anything written should just be theory, at least in like my world of content. Like everything needs to have an actionable takeaway. Like what can I actually apply right now after reading this? That's my process whenever I write something.
So talking about action, okay? Mm-hmm. What's stopping you from getting that done in 12 to 18 months?
Nothing. Nothing's stopping me except my priorities. So my priorities right now are building out what is the new business and the product suite and the async webinars and all that kind of mm-hmm. stuff I can sell. So it's not that I couldn't do it. I could do it way faster than 12 months. It's a matter of it's not a high enough priority because it doesn't, it's just not where I am as a person or a business yet. Building out the product suite is. So once I have that flywheel of so much traffic and automated product sales and automated cohorts and all that kind of stuff, that's when I'll write the book. And also, as we mentioned earlier in the conversation, like, I want to make sure people will buy it. And so to get people to buy it, the more people, the better.
Sure. So you've mentioned the word flywheel 5 times.
Yep.
Have you read Nathan Berry's article on flywheels?
I have not, but I do know who Nathan Berry is. Wow. And it's, I'm sure it's excellent.
So good. It's a long blog. And it's like, you're talking about evergreen products. Products that are sale. Products that will sell now, products that will sell 3 years from now.
Yep.
You tweak it a little bit, it'll be better, whatever. Add to it, take away, whatever. It's great. And he talks about it more in the frame of reference of content writing and how really similar to what you do. The content writing goes into selling the product, and then the next thing you write about is what you talked about, what your audience says. And it just, and he talks about the flywheel. It's wonderful. I'll try to find the article and send it to you. It's great. So what online person that you don't know have you learned the most from?
It's someone whose footsteps I'm following and
okay.
they have no idea. It's Chris Doe. So
Chris Doe,
he ran a design studio for 2 decades, and then he launched an educational platform specific to creatives. Business education platform uh-huh. for creatives. So it's for creatives. I'm not really a creative. I don't put myself in that box. I'm not a designer or whatever, but he has so much information out there about sales, around how to price your offer, how to price creative work. And so when I was starting as a freelancer and entrepreneur, I was reading and watching his material and I didn't even know his name. So then I kind of disappeared from that space for years. So say like 2018 to 2021, I wasn't really online at all or learning. I was just applying everything and working in corporate. And then I came back and I saw his face. I was like, this is the guy I learned.
This is the guy. That's great.
And so in a way, my own business is kind of resembling what he's already built. Just in my own way, for a little bit different of an audience, service-based professionals that kind of work in corporate, think more data analysts or financial analysts, accountants. I learned so much from him, and that's who I would want to speak
that's
with
great.
If I haven't. And it's not unachievable.
No.
One day it'll happen.
He's good. I've seen him a lot. Start of 2023 to start of 2024, how have you changed the most over the past year?
I've changed the most by aligning with what my core mission was. And so when I first started writing online and started coaching, my real goal was to help as many as people as possible, not just like build their business or whatever else. It was just to find work they actually like that doesn't make them miserable every day. If you've ever worked a job that you hate,
mm-hmm.
you know how it impacts all aspects of your life. You hate Sundays, you got the Sunday scaries, you wake up, you're miserable, you drive to work. Afterward, you're too tired to do anything you actually enjoy. So that was my core mission. And so I realized when I was only doing one-to-one coaching, I wasn't impacting near as many lives as I possibly could have. And so realigning with that core mission totally like rephrased how I approach everything from content to what I do every day. And it's made me much more of a giver to remember what my core mission was. Like when I first started writing online, someone would reach out to me for free help. I'd be like, dude, like, stop. It's not free. But now I'm like, let me just build resources for all these people in the world.
Yeah.
And I can be like, if you need free help on something, I will have a way to point you to that. So it won't be like I'm helping you one-on-one and spending all my time on something that's not paid, but it will be a way that I can still feel good about what I'm actually building.
Sure.
And helping as many people as possible. So like realigning with my core mission has changed me and just made me a much better person overall, because I'm much more of a giver. I'm much more aligned with like where they actually are and why they actually want help. Because realistically, if I'm starting my business to help people escape some job or whatever that they're really hating, who am I? Why would I not help them?
Right.
Like, that was the whole point.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, that's been the biggest transformation.
That's really good. What is the hardest part about what you do?
Taking a back seat. So coaching, so when it comes to coaching specifically, especially for someone that's been a consultant, consultants go and they do the stuff and that's it. They do all the work firsthand.
Right.
I'm the one telling you what to do. I'm in control. Coaching is not about that at all. Coaching is about speaking with people and allowing them to kind of come to the conclusion themselves and finding within them what they really already know, they're just not seeing. It's like a clouded piece of judgment. But from a consulting background where I do just go in and be like, do this, do that, here's how you're going to win, I can't just go in and say that. I need to allow them space to kind of think through it and process it and come to the conclusion themselves. So for me, as like a really action-centered go-getter, taking the step back and allowing people to just kind of like come to that conclusion themselves, realize it, and learn on their own, and tap into their own unique like genius,
sure,
I'll say, was definitely the hardest part.
How routine-oriented are you as far as your work is concerned?
I'm not.
You're not at all?
Not really. The only thing I do is wake up, walk my dog, drink coffee. And other than that, I just follow my energy in a way. If I feel good and I feel creative, I'm here to write for hours and hours and hours. But on the days I need to rest, the days I don't feel well, I don't. I mean, yeah, like there's exceptions to that. Sometimes we have to get stuff done, right? Like,
yeah,
that's
sure.
The real world. But I just mean, in general, I follow how I feel more than blah, 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 blah. Got to do this, got to do that.
Do you think if you were more routine-oriented, you would make more money?
Yes, but I would enjoy myself less.
Sure.
So that's the trade-off. And for me, it's about making good money.
Yeah.
And I don't think there's anything wrong with someone chasing a high income.
Zero.
However, you can chase maximizing your revenue and income at the expense of being miserable.
Mm.
It's not worth it. So it's about finding that middle ground for you. If you're happy with 100K, make 100K and do it your way. If you want 500K to live your life, chase that number. I think it's more about reverse engineering where you actually want to be and what you want out of life. Some people want to sit at home, drink coffee, and they don't want to go anywhere, and they're totally happy doing that. I want to travel the globe.
Yeah.
My wife does too. So we have to be like, okay, how much money do we need to make to live that kind of lifestyle? So to me, that's what it's about. It's about just defining what it is for you that you want.
So running an online business, what is your largest expense? What do you pay the most for?
Outsourcing, freelancers, contractors. It's by far the biggest expense. It's people.
Who is your largest expense? What freelancer, you don't have to say Johnny, but what freelancer is your highest expense?
So recurring, it is a coach.
Really? So a coach has a coach?
I think everyone should have a coach.
I love it. So what kind of coaching does he provide you?
Business and content.
Does he really?
Yeah, I think everyone needs an external point of view.
Mm.
Once you hit a certain stage, right? Like everyone can benefit from another professional that has an external lens. They're going to see stuff that you don't. And so for me, what kind of coach would I be if I didn't invest in a coach either? If it's something I believe in, then I should do that myself. Now, from a project-based perspective, the largest expense is like when big projects come around, like a new branding, visual branding design or something like that. But yeah, recurring, it's a coach.
That's great. Do you have any VAs?
I do. But I don't use them recurringly, actually. It's only if I get particularly overwhelmed and I'm like, hey, I want this done for me. I know it needs to be done, but I don't want to do it right now.
Okay. Great, great segue. What does overwhelmed look like for you?
Overwhelmed for me looks like just I've overextended myself because I typically say yes too much.
Mm.
And that has been another big challenge for me is that I'll say yes too much. And I can give you a great example of that, actually. So there was another creator I know on LinkedIn who runs a ghostwriting agency earlier this year. He reached out to me and said, hey, I have my biggest client ever. I'd like to partner with you on it. I was like, okay, well, like, you know, we started talking like payment, all that stuff. And I told him at the beginning, I was like, I know this pay isn't good enough for how much time it's going to take for me. And I'm just totally honest here. I don't think it's the right fit. Well, he turned around and convinced me to do it. I said yes. I started doing the work. 5 days in, I was like, nope, I totally screwed this up and should have listened to my instinct. So I sent him an email. And I was like, hey, we can talk about this, but I have to step down. Like, I already know this is not worth it. So there's multiple lessons there. Number one is no matter how long you've been doing the thing, you're going to make bad decisions from
friends. Yeah.
The more important thing is how do you respond to them and speak to them immediately. So rather than just be miserable and do work, really, I wasn't paid high enough for my level. I told him the truth. I got on a call with him. I was like, hey, look, I know this isn't ideal. I don't want to put you in a bad spot. Like, let me help you find someone else and like segue out of this so you don't churn a client. I just can't do this, man.
Would you have done it if he had paid you double?
No, because he offered that. Still wasn't worth it.
Would you have, if he had given you another number, would you have done it?
Yeah, if he would have probably three times it. But then his margins would have been too low. It wouldn't have mattered for him. And so he was better off finding somebody else.
That's good. So you talked about traveling. What's your favorite vacation you've ever taken?
My honeymoon, man.
Where?
Portugal, however you want to say
it.
We went to Lisbon. We went to Porto. We went to the wine country there, Douro Valley. It's absolutely stunning over there.
Never been there.
So absolutely recommend it. It's as far as like going to Europe from America, you know, it's about the easiest flight you could do.
Sure.
That in the UK. So highly recommend. But I haven't gone out of Europe as much as I want to. I know that. We have so many trips planned and we're going to just start.
Next question. What's your favorite vacation you've never taken?
Never taken. South Korea.
What?
Yeah. I'm more of a
city. Never had that answer before. Yeah.
So I am more of a city person than anything else. Like when I'm on vacation, I'm not the lay on the beach, go to the spa type person. That's the last day of the trip. So the way I like to structure my vacations is I go and I see everything I can. I try all the food. I do the hikes, whatever it is. I want to see all the stuff. I want to be like in the culture and just like experience all of it. And then the last day that's like, all right, no noise in the spa and then fly back. So Seoul is like high on the list for me. Like, I think it would just be a really, really fun city to visit.
That's a great answer. And it is the total opposite of me, but I get it. Like when I go on vacation, I don't want to do anything.
Like noise canceling headphones on the beach. That's your style.
Yeah. I will sit on the beach and I will read and I'll have a notebook next to me and I'll read because the ideas flow so much when I'm gone. And so one of the things that I do on vacation is I have a travel notes. So I have a book. I love to read. And I'll have a book I'm reading, but in the book, I'll have a sheet of paper. And then as thoughts come up about something with the kids, something with the business, something that I want to do, a creative dish I want to have the kitchen make. I mean, it ranges so many things. And at the end of every night, I just sit down and just type out. And I have a document that's travel notes. And it's always up.
I was going to ask you what kind of ideas. I was like, are they business or life? So it sounds
everything.
Like both. Yeah,
it
sounds
okay,
like both.
So for example, let me give you something. Okay, I'm looking at it right now. Jonna's 16th birthday. We want to do something really special for that, okay? The ministry for our family, what does that look like? What does it look like to help reach other people in our family. Can we run MealFit commercials as ads, meaning catering ads and commercials on YouTube? That was one of the things. What is Google Scholar? I was reading and I saw that. Okay. What does restructuring our staff look like? And I have a document here with restructuring. And I have, I just go down the list, you know, split testing, you know, videos. Just the total most random things, and I just put them down because those things didn't come when I was at work, or those things didn't come at my house. They came when I had no noise. No one was asking me questions. No one was wanting my advice. No one was wanting me to go do something, and they came. So they came for a certain reason. So if I can get them down and then re-unpack them or think through them at a later date, or even more so there, it helps. And I'm going to be honest with you, there's a lot of things on this list throughout the years that we've done, and they've been great ideas. I have 17 pages of them right here, and this is going back to, so we take a family vacation in the summer, and we take a trip, me and Jackie, my wife, just us for 5 days every November. The week before Thanksgiving, we always go somewhere by ourselves, no kids. And those times are like extremely helpful. It's right at the end of a busy season, right before another busy season, and it's just great. And so those travel notes have been absolutely wonderful for me.
I believe it. Do you do regular journaling, like day-to-day?
Every morning. I'm the total antithesis of you. I'm extremely routine-oriented. But I like it, though. Mm-hmm. Like, my morning is the same every morning. But I'm trying to do some things differently with my schedule this year. I'm working from home one day a week, at least. I'm not scheduling anything before 10 a.m. 3 days a week. So that, because when I get home from the gym every morning at 6:30, I go to the sauna, I get my, and at that point right there, when I get out of the sauna and I'm eating, my brain is like running. And I love that time of day. And I get screwed up when I'm, like you said, feeling fresh or whatever, and I gotta go to a meeting. You know, so 3 days a week before 10 a.m., I'm not scheduling anything. And I've only been doing it 2 weeks, but it's helped.
Yeah, it already feels better. I think ultimately at the end of the day, that's really what productivity is about to me.
Sure.
It's about really understanding yourself. It starts with self-discovery. And then, when am I at my best? When am I at my worst?
Sure.
And then just navigating around that. And so that's why so much productivity advice is do this at this time, do this routine, it's the best. To an extent, sure, there's biology, of course, but also at the same time, like, you are unique. You also have your own obligations. Some people have children, some people don't. Some people, you know, like, and it changes. And so it's about finding, when do you have time to sit down and do work that requires like real focus? When do you not? When do you feel best? And so real productivity starts with self-discovery, period.
You're a morning person or a night person?
Morning. I'm up, ready to go.
Really? You go to bed late?
No.
What time do you go to bed?
So I get in bed around 9.
Okay.
And I wake up usually, I don't set an alarm. It's a rule. I don't set an alarm ever.
Ever.
I hate alarms.
Oh, wow.
So I'm like, design my life in a way I don't need them. But I wake up early anyway.
What is early?
Anywhere between 5 and 6:30.
Okay.
So not like 4 a.m. crazy early, but
yeah,
early enough. And so I get out of bed immediately. Like, I don't waste any time. I get my coffee, and that's usually when I'm most creative. Like, brain's firing, the coffee's going. So that's when I write. Whenever I do some writing stuff, I do it first thing in the morning. And then whenever I'm like start to get tired or feel the fatigue, take my dog for a walk. And then after that, get the real day going.
That's it. I like that a lot.
So it's a routine, but it's so simple. It's kind of not really, you know, like at the same time.
But it really is simple. I mean, like, the fact that you don't set an alarm, that's wonderful. If you want to stay up till 10 watching a movie with your wife and you sleep till 6, it's okay.
Yeah.
So those are great. This has been great. Where can someone find you? What's the best place if someone wanted to, for coaching, consulting, or any of the ghost, anything like that for you? Where's the best place for someone to find you?
The best and easiest place will be LinkedIn or my website.
Okay.
So there's a contact form on the website. It's very easy to find. And then just type my name in on LinkedIn. I'm the only Thomas Strider out there, I believe.
Perfect.
So you can find me there. And I'm pretty good about checking my messages. So
great. Awesome. Hey, thanks so much for joining me today. It's been great. I've learned a lot.
Thanks for having me. It's been awesome.
You got it.
Appreciate it.